Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. How are you lovely people doing? This is another episode of Highway Diaries. You know, this episode, I want to talk a little bit about just like news that's happening in my life. Number one, I'm shooting a stand-up special as I move from Los Angeles to New York City. I'll be stopping in Las Vegas, September 3rd. Well, I'm doing a show at the Pasadena Ice House with Dave McNary, Sunday, September 2nd. And then that night, I'm going to Las Vegas, and I'll be performing, somewhere in Las Vegas on Monday. And then I'm going all across the country. I'm shooting a stand-up special. I'm shooting three stand-up specials. One is called Conspiracies and Dick Jokes. The next is called Fart Porn and Beer Halls. And the third is called It's a Medical Device. Now, all three of these specials are going to be like 22 minutes long. And they're going to start with a sketch and then have a whole bunch of stand-up for 22 minutes. Little cameos from my friends are going to do stand-up, their favorite jokes. Well, Thomas Jones is going to sing a song that we wrote together. Geneva's going to get a cameo. DC Paul, Kyle Smith. This is what I'm thinking. I'm going to have all my friends on it too. And anyway, so that's what's going on this September. Big news. So, May 22nd, I have a roast battle against Brian McDaniel. Now, I am a very competitive person. I've been putting myself in a competitive mindset. I've been writing jokes every morning. This is really important, you know? If I have a great roast battle, I can maybe pull some of those clips into my specials too. So I'm very competitive, you know. The other thing I'm competitive against is with ping pong. I'm very competitive at ping pong. I know the two people that I've almost never won against, and those people are Dan Everson and Jody Barton. I plan on going with Jody Barton to the Jewish Center. Don't start any rumors. I know what you're thinking. And there's a Jewish community center, and they have like a ping pong place in West Hollywood. I will challenge him there soon. And Dan Everson, I'll see you in New Jersey in October, my friend, and we're going to play some fucking ping pong, and we're going to have a goddamn notebook ready, and it will be a documented fact that I have beaten you, sir. I'm very competitive, and I got this roast battle against Brian McDaniel that's very scary to me. He's a tough opponent, you know, so I don't want to say anything about that because I want to, in my little bunker, like the Unabomber, I'm trying to write the meanest shit ever, so I can't reveal any jokes I'm doing. But another thing, because I'm doing this special, I've really been studying my heroes a lot. It's very important. Two people that I'm really studying right now, almost like I'm giving myself homework all the time, is David Tell and Norm Macdonald, I think are two of the funniest stand-ups out there. And I also like that they're not afraid to be mean, you know, especially they get into feuds with people. I just want to play you this first clip. This is Dave Attell and Richard Belzer and Janine Garofalo are on a show called The Green Room. And it's just like a bunch of comics sitting around in a round table. And Richard Belzer is just a little too boring. And this is like the meanest thing I've ever seen someone say on a talk show. Take it away, Dave Attell.
It's rare when you get to work with legends. Of course, some of the people that I love in comedy. And of course, Animal Adorable Rescue, just in case Nickelodeon picks this up.
You're right.
Can he smell laughter? What's up, boy?
Can I just say one thing right
yes,
now?
Yes, sir.
This woman, to me and many others, is a hero. And by that, I mean she went on...
Come on, Glenn.
She went on the radio at a time when the atmosphere in this country was repellent and loathsome and uncivil. And she brought an incredible amount of intelligence, dedication, research, wit, and passion. Rarely heard on the radio. And she stuck to her guns. She was vilified by the right. I can't think of a more important person to have on your show.
And before you apart.
Thank you.
And she's funny.
Fucking funny.
Yeah, and she's
fucking funny too. Hey, Paul, who brought the loop for this stroke fest you're putting on tonight?
He had a great show, that After Hours.
Insomnia, yeah, it was a great show.
Oh, come on, Bill. You're acting like you don't know. Who are you, Mark Twain? You know what's going on. What hell is happening yonder? What the? Come on.
You son of a bitch. If I could get over there, I'll be there in 20 minutes.
He's going to beat me with a slave.
Hey, you know, Bells, I don't intend this as an
insult. You can't hurt me, Bell.
Okay, but you kind of look like George Burns with AIDS.
Oh,
wow. That's not an insult.
I appreciate that.
The only time Paul has a funny bone in his body is when I fuck him in the ass.
But this is like great 80s comedy, fucking balls to the wall, yeah.
It's
been 3 minutes, no one said Noam Chomsky. What's going on here, Paul? We're dropping the ball. We're never going to get on the cover of Yawn magazine. Here, let's talk about the Middle East more.
Okay.
All right, now the turban, not the most fun hat ever. Am I right or what? Paul? Thoughts? Glenn? Anything?
You'd look good in a turban.
You think so?
Yeah.
I'd look more like an interpreter.
It's just so funny to me, the emotional dynamics. Like, Richard Belzer is there, and he's trying just to eat Jeanine Garofalo's pussy. Oh, she's so funny. You wouldn't understand how funny she is. Listen, you mortals don't understand how great she is. Yay. And then Dave comes out with Yawn magazine. Like, not... He, you know, it's just funny because when you sign the list to do an open mic at the Comedy Store potluck, you sign up at 6 p.m., you know, 500 people sign the list, and only 20 are given the privilege of doing 3 minutes of stand-up. They're picked at random, a little favoritism, you know, whatever, whatever, but 20 names out of the 400. It took Dan Nolan, he's been on the podcast, Dan Nolan was signing the potluck list for 3 years, winning roast battles, signing up for the open mic, not getting it for 3 years, for 3 minutes. Okay, Richard Belzer has got to a point where he just wants to cuck up to the audience, and David Tell goes, that's not the game we're playing, motherfucker. Tell some jokes, okay? That was a 3-minute kiss ass for no reason. I got 90 jokes written right in front of me, apropos to the situation. I'm going to start cranking them out, so get out of my way, or come out with some of your own. I mean, the subtext of what he said there with Yawn magazine is so packed with, it's just the meanest thing. I love it. The other guy I'm studying in just his feuds and how he deals with people and how grumpy he is, Norm Macdonald had two of the most hilarious feuds. He's very competitive too. And this is how Norm Macdonald and John Lovitz played tennis. And let's hear some of these clips. They have a big feud as a result of their tennis matches.
Lovitz goes every day to the Beverly Wilshire and Hotel. Well, it's an expensive Beverly Hills hotel. I don't know what it's called. But anyways, the guy there, the coach, is Alex Olmeda, who's a Peruvian tennis player from Holden. He's very good. He played, you know, he beat Ron Laver 3 times.
Right.
And so he's 60 or whatever, but, you know, a Peruvian 60. You know?
Does that mean he's a young 60 or
yeah,
old 60?
You know,
he's a young 60.
Yes, yeah, sexy.
Peruvian 60, I like that.
Yeah, Peruvian 60. So you could still imagine him with a lady.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like my father when he was 60, it would be hard to imagine.
Yeah.
But a Peruvian, you know.
All right.
Can imagine. You can easily imagine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because my father, he doesn't know. You know, he'd get you a Casio watch to a lady. That would be his thing. But these guys, they're more champagne on your spine, my darling. You know, it's a whole different thing. Anyways, so he, it has nothing to do with his way with the ladies, the story. But John Lovitz got lessons from him every single day at this hotel.
Yeah. You know?
So then he told me that he was really good at tennis. So I was like, I could beat you.
You just assume you can beat John Lovitz in anything, right?
Yeah. Because I played tennis 4 times.
Yeah.
I figured that's about what it would take to beat John Lovitz. So I said, yeah, I'll play it, you know. And he goes, you'll never beat me. I play everybody. What are you talking about? I go, no, I'll play anything you want. So I go to the place. I'm in my jeans and a leather jacket and I have clothes for tennis. I only played 4 times. So I get there and they give me a club and everything, and a tennis racket. And I know, clearly, I'm going to be John Lovitz. So we start playing, and, you know, I just keep tinking them over a little bit, you know, a little backspin, you know,
yeah.
near the net, whatever that shot's called. So Lovitz lumbers over, you know, and he can never get to it. You know? And so I just beat him like 6-0 in the first set. So he starts thinking I'm doing something illegal by tinking it over the net.
The backspin backhand
yeah,
or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. He's never seen this. He thinks you're supposed to hit it to him.
Oh.
So so he starts complaining because he's like, I play Alex and I can beat him. He's talking about beating Alex Almeida, the pro, the tennis
60-year-old Peruvian. Yeah. Yeah.
He thinks, so I said, well, what are you? He goes, I beat him. I play him every day, you know. And I go, well, love it. So this, you know, a tennis pro is what their, one of their big skills is they hit the ball so it will land on your racket.
Right.
You know, so wherever you're standing, the ball is right there, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's not true, you know. Then he was convinced that I could beat Alex Almeida. He said, you've never seen anything like this, Alex. He tinks it over the net. So, this is Lovitz. So so then I played, and then he wanted to really win, you know, and he kept playing me, and I said, oh, God. So one day I was like, he was just getting so angry and everything, so I let him win one game.
Yeah.
And then he quit. He retired.
On top.
Yeah, calling himself the champ.
Like John Elway.
Yeah, exactly. He won one game. He goes, doesn't matter. So whoever won last, that's what they do in boxing. And I was saying, well, boxing, I do have to defend them, but whatever.
What he left out is that we're playing, and he you know, I play all the time. He never plays, right? But he can get the ball, but he dinks it back, and he has no rhythm. Anyway, when someone just, like, floats every ball, if you're not used to it, it's, you can't get any rhythm, and it's just hard to, you know, play. So he won, but what he left out was after every point, he'd leave the court for like a minute and brag to his assistant about how, look what just happened. Then he'd come back, 1 point, he'd leave again. So I go, Norm, do you want to play? And he just kept leaving. It was very frustrating, and so he won. So then I said to my coach, I go, how do you beat a guy like that? It's so frustrating. It's just it's, the ball's just – and he, my teacher's guy, Alex Almeida, who's a you're into sports. Look him up. He was a champion college player, Wimbledon champion, Rod Laver, Emerson, who won Wimbledon, and he's in the Hall of Fame from Peru. Great guy. So he said, just step in and take it early. And I go, could you beat someone like that? He goes, what are you kidding? I'd kill him. I go, all right, fine. So then we played again, and then I just, you know, I creamed him and I beat him. So and also, I wasn't trying as hard the first set because he was, you know, he's not as good, so I'm just taking it easy. But then
he was
like
wearing jeans
horrible.
And a leather jacket.
Well, he beat you 6-0 the first time, didn't he?
6-0?
No, he wasn't wearing. I don't remember what he was wearing. It was no, he didn't beat me 6-0. He's full of crap.
That's what he told me.
So then we played again, and then I beat him quite easily. And he went, let's play again. I said, no, I don't play you again. Because when I knew he'd want to play after I beat him, the last time we played, I beat him, and that's that.
Give us a good league of
the. He cheats, and he's not fun to play with.
Of course.
So he tells this story, you know.
Right. What's so funny is how John Lovitz, his side of the story is, oh, Norm's a cheat. He's a cheating. And then Norm's comeback with, he thought I was supposed to hit it to him. He's lumbering over. Oh, my God. He just keeps slamming him on being old and privileged. And he says you're cheating because he's not hitting it directly to him. It's so mean. And this is how a genius squashes a hack. I don't want to say John Lovitz, yeah. I'm just saying there's levels to the game of being the funniest fucker ever. And part of it's being mean. And if there's little pieces of bullshit that John Lovitz doesn't know about his own emotional state, you know, how he's, you know, pays $600 a practice with this tennis pro, giving off his resume and shit, and then he doesn't want to run to a ball. He thinks it's cheating if you put some backspin and chip it into the corner. No, you're supposed to avoid your opponent. It's a tennis match. And then what's also so great is you become to understand that John Lovitz $400, $700 an hour tennis coach is letting him win, which is just so pathetic. So he gets delusional. Oh, I beat the former Olympian. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. He's playing some scrimmage games at your level because you wouldn't understand how much better your coach is than you. And it's just how delusional John Lovitz is about his ability to play tennis at his age. Oh, it's so mean. Norm Macdonald also had an amazingly hilarious feud with Chris Kattan. And this is my favorite story.
There you go. We're on SNL one time, right? This is what Norm just didn't care about anyone. Just a quick story. Pamela Anderson is on it. Every time a hot chick would come on, Kattan would go over the top and like, oh my God, you know, he'd write a sketch. We're going to make out. Right. She's hot. She's with Tommy Lee Hammer. Back off.
Yeah, right.
I mean, come on. So he writes a sketch, and they do this sketch where it's the Twilight Zone when everyone's in pig face or something.
Right.
So that's the goof. Mm-hmm. So me, Kattan, we're all in it, and Norm is the guy who's got to go, imagine if you will. And Norm doesn't read sketches, and he does. He's a pro.
Right.
So he would rehearse it and go, hey, imagine if you will, second time. And Kattan, Kattan would go, my God, you don't even sound like him. Why would you do that? And I would stand and go, Norm, you gonna hit him back? Like, what's, you gonna say something to him? You're just gonna take that from this guy? Now we go to a dress show, which has audience, uh-huh. And it's being filmed.
Right.
And again, he starts punking into Norm on the set.
Right.
He's going, oh my God, Norm, you gonna do it right? It's my only sketch.
Right, you don't sound like Rod Serling.
Hey, yeah. hey, imagine, 10, 9, and we're on. You know, hey, imagine if you will. He knew the deal.
Right.
Now we go to air. And Norm still hasn't said nothing. Every time Kattan would say something to him, I'd look at Norm like, hey, man, you're my hero. What's up? Because if you're not going to say something, I will.
Right.
And sure enough, you know, he'd give me like a wink. I swear to you, he'd give me a wink. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Live air comes on. And I'm like, 20 seconds to the Twilight Zone sketch. He starts up again. We're mic'd, the whole audience is listening. He's like, oh, my God, Kattan. Norm, you've got a salad. Oh, God, Pamela, you're so hot. Norm, you're going to... Pamela, I can't wait if you ever get rid of... 10 seconds! Norm turns to Kattan. Right before he says, he goes, hey, Pamela, did Chris tell you he's gay yet? And he's got all this rage because he likes being gay. Everyone, why don't you just say you're gay and you wouldn't have all this anger and be a pester? 5 seconds! And you wouldn't have all this rage and try to interrupt everyone's sketch because you suck this week. And we're on! Imagine if you will. I'm like, there's my hero. There's my hero.
See, he knew to save it for the live
saved
air.
It. He
nice.
Saved it.
Nice. And Kattan sank.
I couldn't even get my words out.
Chris and Norm Macdonald apparently hate each other. This is according to my notes. When Norm hosted Saturday Night Live, Chris did not appear on the show. Wow.
Wait, when was
in November of 97.
Oh, right.
Norm said of Chris, I don't know, but to me he seems gay.
Right.
He claims he's not, but I've never seen like a guy who's not gay seem so gay. I don't find him funny. What can I say? Never made me laugh. What happened between... First of all, I don't believe you're gay, are you? I know someone you
no,
dated.
No, I'm not gay.
Yeah, you do.
And he's certainly had kinda... to have laughed at you once or twice.
Right.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
You're a funny guy.
Right.
Well, that was the
I mean, your characters,
Stone
some
article.
Of your characters are effeminate, so maybe people will think you're
right.
gay.
Right, like Mango's like, you know...
He's gay.
Queer as day.
Right. So then...
Yeah.
So is Norm a homophobe? Is that the problem? He doesn't
I
like gay characters?
I definitely think he has a problem with, yeah, homophobe.
But give me the history of this. I love feuds.
Okay, let's see. What I don't know
you
exactly.
You didn't appear on the show for a reason. You just...
No. I don't. I just think I didn't get my sketches in. It wasn't like, I'm not appearing in the show. You
and when you're on Saturday Night Live, I've heard this before. When you say you didn't get your sketches in,
yeah.
You have to write your own material. If you don't get it in, if
it doesn't pass muster.
Then you're not on the show.
Right.
Wow, yeah. A lot of pressure.
Yeah, every week.
So do you have to hire separate guys to help you write material?
No. I mean, they're there. There's, you know, there's people you write with normally, so.
Right, okay. Because I mean, some people don't help other people, you know?
No, some people don't.
Right.
But I'm not, you know, because I'm not exactly the easiest guy to write for, though. You know, I'm not like, you know, I'm not an everyman, you know? I can't be the boyfriend all the time. I'm more of a freak.
So why Norm Macdonald? I mean, Norm is an easygoing guy. I know Norm. Why the dislike? Something happened.
Well, let's see. When I first got on the show, he was so nice. He and Spade were just, like, so nice. And then I don't know what happened. He just started... Like Garth Brooks was, oh, we did like a pitch meeting, and he started saying things in the pitch meeting, like, you don't want to do it. Oh, like Garth Brooks was a guest. Yeah. He was a guest. I was like, you don't want to do another fag sketch. Like things like that, and people would laugh.
Oh, dear.
I was like, why is he saying
all of this?
And then it got kind of old, like, Jesus, Norm, you're like another.
And it makes you inhibited in a writing meeting if someone's goofing on you every time you open up your mouth, right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't care because I'm not gay. If I was like, you know, some gay guy going, I don't want anyone to know that I'm just this
right. And so the gay jokes kept going and going and going.
Yeah, the gay jokes kept going and going.
And then you finally said, hey, I've had it with you, Norm.
Well,
you ever confront him?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But it's like a playful thing. He says it's like a Jack Benny, Fred Allen kind of a feud thing.
But you don't see it that way.
No, no. I think he's, yeah. I don't know. But he this is what happened. We were on a flight together. We didn't plan on being together on the same flight. We were flying from L.A. back to New York.
Right.
To do Saturday Night Live, and it was a red eye, and he's behind me, and we're, you know, getting along, whatever. You know, he's talking about crapping on women, or I don't know what he was talking about. Something like that.
Yeah, something.
And it was funny, because he was so loud,
right?
You know, so everyone else could hear it. I'm like, I just crap on this girl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, laughing.
Right.
Because he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
And then I wake up, and, you know, because it's a red eye, and one of my shoes is missing. I was like, where's my shoe? And Norm's like, hey, you lost your shoe, huh? And then he leaves. And I'm like, so disoriented. And I'm the last guy in the flight looking for my shoe. And I just, you know, walk off the plane with one shoe. And all the stewardess is like, you are funny.
Oh, no. So he stole your shoe.
He stole my shoe.
And he's playing goofs on you. He's not respecting you.
Right.
Right.
And then I took his jacket on a really cold night.
Yes.
And his assistant called me at home going, I got to get Norm's jacket. Please get me Norm's jacket. And she was like freaking out.
Right.
I was like, no, this is between Norm and I.
You can't play in this game.
What? Norm's doing well? What?
What?
Do you hang out with Norm or is it impossible?
It's pretty impossible because he's crazy.
He is.
In L.A., I call him and he goes, I go, what happened last week? I called you to go. You called me? And I go, yeah. On my phone? I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, yeah, I got that. Oh, you didn't call me back? No.
And he's serious.
Yeah, he's crazy.
And yeah, I know. Like, I have him on the show.
I love him, though. He's the funniest guy around. I think you need to be kind of crazy to be really funny.
He is very funny. I love him, too. And he has a gambling problem, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was telling us how
secret,
he was all excited that he had $80,000. He won $80,000 in Vegas, but he had lost like $100,000 on basketball.
Right,
and that's on nickel slots. That's how serious he is.
Did you always know he had a gambling problem?
Mm-hmm.
You did. When did you know that? At Saturday Night Live?
I first knew he had a pee in a bottle problem.
Right.
Remember that? You always talk about
that. Yeah, it's great.
And then I knew.
Does he still save his urine? Do you know?
I don't know. He used to put it in Ziploc baggies, sign it, and send it to fans.
Is that true?
No.
Oh.
But he did. Right. He would take, after Saturday Night Live, they give you a car, a limousine, if you want to go to the party, and he would take it to Atlantic City.
Really?
He's a hard ass. He's a hardcore dude. I know,
he'll even get into fist fights.
And then he'd still stay at a table for hours and hours.
What do you think of that?
I feel lucky.
And then you don't even know if he's married or single. It's never really clear.
I don't know, but I know girls like him. He's, you know, when you're that... Something's that wrong. They pick up on it and like it.
They like the tragedy of that.
Fixer upper, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm gonna make him a regular guy.
Right, but never worked.
And in that story, Chris Kattan just comes off like the pettiest loser, and Norm is just patient, just waits, lets him take it, because he's like the only one of these exchanges that matter are right before the cameras go on. That's when I'm gonna shake your confidence, motherfucker. You want to try to fuck with me, bitch at me about my performance? We'll see what happens when those camera goes on. And it's just the mastery of his emotions to delay. His reaction is just unbelievable. He's just such a fucking... I don't know. He's very emotionally intelligent about himself. He keeps himself calm and he just launches, you know. So anyway, these are some of my heroes. I'm also going to be doing stand-up at the Norwood. This is going to be filmed for the special. I'm doing a bunch of stand-up in Los Angeles before I hit the road. I'll be in New Orleans for a while in, like, September 18, 9, 17, 18, 19. Around that time, I'll be in New Orleans filming shows. I already got two in the can. One will be this Thursday, May 10 at the Norwood. Come by at around 9 p.m. That's when the show starts. Holla Back is going to record some stand-up. I'm very excited about things right now. Dave Attell also was so mean to midgets, little people. He was not very politically correct. So this one little person got so upset during one of his jokes that she stormed the stage. And Dave Attell does not hesitate to be violently mean to her.
Balloons are like a kid's drug, aren't they? They're like Valium to a child. It's like, what's wrong? Here. Oh. My best friend is a midget, everyone. And everybody should have one midget friend, you know? Because they're kind and loyal. And if you're sad, you can always just look at them. Am I right? I mean, come on. No, that's all right. There's more. Yeah. We do everything together except seesaw, because that really wouldn't be fair to him. You know what I'm saying? Uh-oh. Whoop. Holy hoo hang. Can I help you, miss? You know, there's a show going on here.
Yeah, well, you're an
a-hole. Oh, I'm an a-hole? Okay, well, can I get a little security up here quickly? A little security? No. How about a balloon? Balloon. Thank you, Myrtle B.
That is the end of your homework assignment. I've just go study Dave Attell and Norm MacDonald and Jim Norton if you want to be the best. See where my heroes come from. It's all a bunch of white, cisgender, privileged male. The patriarchy is where I draw my comedic inspiration from. Anyway, speaking of the patriarchy, I want to give an update on a former guest we had. Now, if you'll remember, if you've listened to these podcasts with James Robert Wright, he said that his cousin's mom was poisoned because she was next to inherit their Illuminati fortune in Dallas. And so then when she was poisoned, it went to the other side of the family. And so James went back to Dallas because, you know, he was kind of broke in Los Angeles and needed his family support of what's left of them. And he goes to the aid of his cousin David, whose mom was poisoned for inheritance reasons. He went to go live with him. And things seem like, okay, well, you guys should get the will in order and take the other family to court and try to prove this murder case and all this stuff. And, you know, I was worried for James as he was going back to Dallas. But I figured at least he has his cousin David and they have a little mansion they inherited and all this stuff. So, David 2 days ago gets the Dallas police raid them because they're on the side of the evil cabal. The Dallas police take David into custody. And I've been calling James trying to figure out what's going on. He hasn't taken my calls. You know, I guess he's dealing with other things. So I'm going to try to call him again now and just get an update on the situation. I tried to frame it as fast as I could. James also used to be he's been ordained a 32nd degree member of the Scottish Rite. He's a 9th degree member of the York Rite in Freemasonry. And he might be the biological son of Princess Diana, where her egg was taken out of her womb by the royal gynecologist. Maybe he was put in a surrogate lady. And anyway, if you'll also remember, a month before he went to Dallas, he got a phone call from Michael Rockefeller asking him to summon ghosts with him in New Jersey.
When you turned him down?
First of all, a job offer performing rituals for dark shit, that's not a job. Okay. But, well, maybe it is, but not for me.
Hey, James, you little faggot. You better give me a call back in 2 minutes. Otherwise, I'm going to make sure you're dead. I'll clip your toenails out, okay? I'll behead you. I'll make you suffer. I'll burn you alive. And then I'll feed you to fucking pigs. Give me a call back in 2 minutes. Bye.
I like how he says bye at the end.
Yeah, well, at least he's formal, you know.
You know, I guess because James has the right royal Illuminati blood and his high degrees of Freemasonry, he was very adept at summoning spirits in the Scottish Rite building in Dallas, allegedly. So then he keeps getting creepy phone calls from Michal. He declines and goes to the aid of his cousin in Dallas. And then his cousin was taken to jail for no reason. His car was tampered with multiple times. Well, he's out of jail. David's out of jail. And I'm calling James Robert Wright right now. I hope I can have briefly explained. That's his story, at least. And, you know, maybe if he took the job with Michal Rockefeller summoning ghosts, he would be, you know, in the arms of the cabal right now instead of being persecuted by. So we're just going to see if we can check up with James.
Yes?
Hey, buddy.
What's up?
Well, I've been following your Facebook post. I dropped you off at the airport to LAX, where you were going to Dallas. You know, I thought... I thought you'd be safer there. What happened to David recently?
Those fucking idiot goddamn Dallas cops had, oh, our family used them to swarm this place and fucking arrest him for, oh, he had brass knuckles on him. Who fucking cares? You know what? I'm not interested in your stupid laws. It doesn't matter anyway because it's a fucking misdemeanor ticket. And they fucking, no. No, no, no. You see, they are fucking up so goddamn big that I'm going to end up owning the city just to burn it down. So, you know, whatever. They need to make better decisions is my advice for them.
So are you telling me that you started to file certain legal petitions with the Dallas police about the murder of your aunt in regards to the will that she received? And then your car started getting tampered with, and then they arrested David for some bullshit. Is that what you're saying?
I haven't been around filing anything. I've been on the phone with every fucking agency until there's none left, and they don't want to address the problem because they don't want to admit that they don't work for the fucking taxpayers. They work for the fucking old ruling families of Texas, and you know what? They need to all be fired. Every last fucking one of them. The cops here are so fucking useless and sad. As is the city, as is the fucking code. Name a department. They're sending code compliance after us, too. We just got a new thing this morning. Oh, you need to cut your grass. The grass is cut. What the fuck are you talking about?
They're hitting you with a housing homeowners association violation?
They are, as they've done my whole life that I've witnessed, they are abusing every fucking city employee and city office that they can. All right? And the person who's doing it is an adopted trash fucking mutt who is a heroin whore, who is a heroin trafficker, who's fucking using my aunt's fucking mansion as her clearinghouse for dope and whoring and everything else. And the city's fine with this. They support this. That's okay because... I'm not that worried. You know what? The public is on my side. The city of Dallas does not stand a fucking chance in the little public relations war, so they can suck my asshole. I don't fucking care. And I told the Dallas police, fuck off. They're so goddamn inept at their job. Go do your job. Go fucking patrol crime. Why do you spend all your man hours following us? They need to be fired. All of them. They're all corrupt. Every last one. This is Dallas.
So you're telling me that the FBI is not interested.
Oh well, don't be so sure yet, because I hear that many people have now that I've made this a big public stink. Several people have called the FBI about this, so I don't even have to make that call.
Remember that time?
I want that fucking house on Shirestone raided by feds. I want Deborah crucified, and then maybe I'll be calmer.
Deborah who? Is she the mayor of Dallas?
No, no. She's my aunt's fucking adopted bitch whore daughter that all her life, that she's shot heroin every single day since 1972. She's never fucking worked. She thinks she's hot in this ruling bitch shit, and she's not. She's trash. She is human trash. And the fact that Dallas is taking orders from her is like, do you realize how stupid you're behaving?
Is she a big muckety muck in Eastern Star or some sex cult?
No.
How does she have all this power?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I know, on the one hand, my aunt's brain is dead. She's got late-stage Alzheimer's. So she's not capable of making these kind of phone calls. Because every time the cops come at us, or code compliance, or name one, okay, they keep using this very peculiar language, like, we're here for the grand sign, and blah, blah, blah. Okay, I know what that means. That means that this bitch is calling, making me fucking phone calls, pretending to be my aunt. And these morons are listening to it, thinking it's my aunt. Guess what? She's not capable of operating a telephone. She's not capable of having a conversation. So you have a heroin junkie who's calling you and totally running y'all around thinking it's one thing. Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God. I've always said it, that the people that run this city are fucking stupid. They're uneducated. They don't know anything about anything. They're stupid fucking pigs, okay?
Why would they be taking orders from your comatose aunt, even if they, why does she have power?
Because my aunt is like the fucking Victoria Gotti of Dallas. She did give those orders back in the day. They're still operating, the city, that is, on an antiquated fucking thing, okay? Remember, Dallas is not capable of living in the present. They have to live in the past to feel comfortable. So, that's okay. So I'm going to whip them out of it.
So they take their orders instead of, like, their elected officials having power, like just some Illuminati chick and a moo-moo on the phone is where they take their cues from?
Please. All elected officials here have always been puppets. The ruling families fucking tell them what to do.
The ruling family. So this is just a network of cabal hierarchy that pull the strings, and the politicians are too scared to go against what the oil oligarchs tell them to do?
Yeah, look, it's like this. The show Dallas in the 80s, okay, fictional show, right? But it was based on reality of how there's these families and they fight and they run everything here. So that is how it is. And Dallas, because Dallas people are very scared of change, and they're very scared of the outside world. So they really, really like to live in the past and pretend like nothing is ever moving forward, okay? So that is why they still operate this way. They don't know any different. Well, I'm getting ready to educate them. So, because I'm bringing in Hollywood, and we're going to rock this bitch. I have no regard and no respect for this city or this state, and I have every right to say that because I'm a son of the Republic of Texas, and I speak on behalf of the fucking Alamo. Fuck you, fucking moron city. They're goddamn assholes. Stupid fucks I doubt any of them even have a college degree that have their jobs, okay? That is how dumb shit is here.
Yeah. Yeah, so who from Hollywood is going to come over and coup d'etat Dallas with you? And let me just further say, before I let you answer, we visited a place called the Hollywood Lodge together, the only time I've ever been in a Freemasonic lodge. We went to the Hollywood Lodge, which is actually a North Hollywood type of area. They used to own the Jimmy Kimmel building. They sold it for a strip mall in North Hollywood. We went there. And, like, the smartest guy there was, like, way too confident, a little too fat. Like, he read all the books, he had some Adderall, and was a terrible listener. And that's the problem with, I didn't see anyone who wasn't a dummy there. So this whole lodge system also, I think, is shit. But anyway, you hold some charters, but what are you talking about with this Hollywood coup d'etat in Dallas? What's going on? You don't want to reveal your secret plan?
No, I'm not going to name names over this fucking bugged-ass phone, but what I will say is that they can't compete. Because guess what? Every time they take a fucking pot shot at us, and reveal themselves for behaving corruptly and allowing this shit to even exist, okay? All these fucking activists and everybody that I am friends with, they're all watching closely, okay? And don't think that there's not going to be backlash. It's coming. It's coming big time like they've never seen or imagined.
So do you think just publishing in some kind of, you know, big publication, your story and how Dallas runs, it can catch them with their pants so down that they can't even, that change has to be made?
Well, yeah. I don't see any other way. That's why, you know, I mean, I've received, you know, some phone calls from some old faces here that I know, and they're like, you really shouldn't be putting all this on social media. And they're like, well, you know what? Yeah, I should. Because guess what? Everybody's watching it, and the city of Dallas could spend $10 million in a fucking public relations campaign to lambast me. I can do it for free. That's my power. Fuck you. So, yeah, no, see, I came back with a lot of weapons. I don't think anybody ever thought I could. And now it's my turn to have fucking fun with these bitches.
That's just a problem. When you're raised with all the wealth in the world, you know deep in your soul you've never had to earn anything, so you have no actual character. So you start to do heroin, which fills a void that makes you feel like you aren't a waste of a human being because you don't have to work like the other people around you. And you realize you're not as strong as the normie surface monkeys because they work and you don't, you know? And then the whole city is run by taking phone calls from oil baronesses in a muumuu who never had to do anything in their whole life. Is that what you're telling me? How Dallas runs these days? They're getting fooled by the wrong lady in the wrong muumuu on heroin, and that's, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well, yes. I mean, if you have a female voice, and you know all of your mother's personal information, and you make a phony phone call to city officials and say, this is Abraham, and I would like for you to go fuck over my grandson, then they do it. That's how it is. It's sick. It's not right, but it is how it is. So that's what has to be changed. Dallas needs a spanking bad, and I'm going to do it. I'm holding the paddle. Fuck all of you. I don't care about this city, because guess what? I will lay waste to it and go back to L.A. Fuck them. I don't care. They're like, oh, what is he doing? He's out of his mind. Oh, shoot. I'm warming up, bitch. Fuck all of you.
Well, I like your attitude, James. By the way, I've been recording this. I hope that's okay.
I don't give a shit. Fucking broadcast that. I don't care. This stupid ass city, man. I mean,
are you now? You know, be honest, James. Are you a little, you know, wondering how your life would be if you took Uncle Michel Rockefeller's job offer and you went to New Jersey to summon ghosts for him? Do you feel like maybe you could have avoided some of this stress here in Dallas?
James, I'm sorry I got angry at you. Let's talk like civilized adults. Call me back so we can talk. All right, buddy? I'll wait for your call. 856-669-7670.
Now, we've had some phone calls together. Did I ever leave you, like, that wide of a emotional birth?
You little fuck, you're going to be in a goddamn body bag. If you can't handle the light, then you're going to feel the heat. You're going to be put inside of a body bag and fed to fucking pigs. You better give me a call back, you little cocksucking piece of shit. Otherwise, I'm going to excommunicate your goddamn gay ass. Bye.
So, did you call him back when he had the sweet voicemail that was like,
why would I call someone like that back? Sweet voice.
You need to give me a call back. I'm telling you.
He's sweet there. That's very bizarre, James.
Oh, you find that endearing?
Hey, call me back. Bye.
No. I think that would compound my fucking problems and stress a hundredfold.
Have you heard from Uncle... You haven't heard from Uncle Michel in a minute?
No, have not.
He seemed really rational on the phone last time he was calling you, so I don't know. Is he in jail?
I don't know. I've never heard back from the fucking Jersey police. I've never heard back from that church I was trying to interview about the bomb threat. I've never heard back from fucking Homeland Security morons. So fine. If they see, and that is just yet another situation that's exactly like the one here. If Rockefeller can boss around the fucking law enforcement of New England, then, you know, do I have a desire to ever go to New England? No. It's the most disgusting place in America, so, and Texas is running a close second, and I'm about to lay waste to that, so, you know, fucking cause the biggest scandal ever seen in the history of fucking Dallas and then catch a plane out. Fuck them.
When are you doing that? Because I'll be in Dallas, you know. Sometime early September. Are you going to be there then?
Well, probably. I mean, they better get ready for this ride because I'm not leaving until I'm satisfied that my damage is done.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I think you should go over your aunt's house and wear a muumuu and smoke a cigarette. And just as long as you call from that landline, I mean, they'll do whatever you say. So.
I'm not going over to that house until it's been raided by the Fed. And it's for me and David to walk in the door and assume control.
Mm.
Until then, I can't be bothered with that fucking address. And by the way, I've lived in that house before a long time. You cannot pay me to live in that motherfucking house. No. That house is evil. It's full of horrible memories. I don't care if it's a $1 million house. David and I want to burn it down.
No, just...
when it's our... hard to do it.
Just sell it, you know, make that money, you know, come back and get a small condo in West Hollywood, you know, be some kind of open, the only chartered Freemasonic hall to give Templar degrees in America, and, you know, be a hero of the Knights Templar. Isn't that your goal?
Well, that would be very nice, but in the meantime, I got my work cut out for me with this mess, and, I don't know, I just have to handle everything one fucking scandal at a time.
Now,
you know?
Were you ever, now, David's mom is the one who was poisoned, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever get an autopsy, toxicology, what happened to the body?
That's a good question, because we've been to the funeral home, and according to them, who, you know, whose job it was to handle the body, they can't answer that. They don't know. Their official statement is they don't know what happened to the remains. And they can't explain why there was no coroner, no this, no that. They're trying to run with this shit that, oh, it was congestive heart failure. Really? Is that so? Okay, well, it just happened that she had a defibrillator, which prevents that situation. And even if that were to fail, there would still be that defibrillator that you, the funeral home, would have had to remove from her, preparing her for cremation, and give back to David. So where is the motherfucking defibrillator and all the medical data associated with it to back your story that it was congestive heart failure? Oh, it's all conveniently gone missing.
There's no death certificate? Something? Is there a certificate of death?
There is a death certificate that is fraudulent because that fucking heroin slut fucking signed it as the next of kin, and that little asshole... cokehead douchebag, deadbeat dad, brother of hers, fucking signed off on it as a witness that it was true. So, you know what? They're all getting ready to go down for fraud. The FBI needs to raid 12107 Shirestone Lane.
For a murder case, fraud.
For murder, for extortion, for organized crime, for drug trafficking, for fucking murder for hire. For goddamn
prostitution,
money laundering. Yeah, I mean they're doing it all. They're doing it all.
So you're saying that house is used as a heroin whore house where you can buy drugs, you can get hookers, and it's run by an oil baroness.
No, media adopted. Baroness.
Right.
Media baroness.
Oh, I see. Very weird world you come from, James. I'm not going to lie. And is it also true that Is it also true that you've seen a murder in that house when you were a small kid?
Yeah, well, not going to really comment on that because you know what I'm going to do about that. I'm going to go find all the old witnesses to that and get them on camera because they're still around. I got to do that before they, you know, die of natural causes because they're getting old. So there's still a couple neighbors left. And, you know, I'm gonna explore that here soon.
Never a dull moment with Highway Diaries' most prolific guest, James Robert Wright. He's taking on the Illuminati of Dallas. He's going to come back to Los Angeles. He's going to open up a lodge, give out Freemasonic degrees. Someone's going to fly in from Transylvania. He's going to get part of the royal fortune. Who knows what's happening? Your brother, Prince Harry.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know about that, but Diana's ring is on my finger, so the royals can, you know, fuck off, too. I have nothing for those assholes.
How?
Stupid motherfuckers.
How did you come to...
All I know how to do is sit there and drain the British taxpayers, just walk around and act like their shit doesn't stink, and the jig is up. They fucking killed her because she fucked a Muslim. They think that's the rules. The fucking conspiracy theorists had it right all along. And, you know, I hope that they go down from as equally horrible of scandals. But it's not really my arena. You know, I'm not a Brit. I don't live over there. All I can say is that the British people need to ask themselves, do you really need to pay out all that money in taxes because you need a royal family to tell you what to do? Really? That's really sad, actually. British people need to wake the fuck up.
How did you come to acquire Princess Diana's engagement ring from the Muslim guy?
Well, I'm not clear on the details, but it was my family that did, and the ring has now been inherited. And 'cause you have to ask yourself, well, if this family came into possession of that ring, and they came into possession of an embryo, what's going on there?
Boy. The eggs were stolen, huh?
That is the story as far as any investigating it can show, yeah.
Now, you also told me, maybe off record, that you were invited one time to Transylvania by Charles.
Yeah, and I declined that invitation. I'm not going to Romania. There was other stuff behind that, and I don't care about those people. I mean, look, there are people there that I care about. I have that title with the Grand Lodge there. I'm their consulate for California. Blah, 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 great. But as far as the people who were inviting Karina and I out there, that was something else. And I advised her, do not get on a plane to go over there. I believe it's nefarious, and I'm not either.
What would have happened in Transylvania?
I don't know, and I don't care. I don't care.
Would you have seen royal people drinking blood?
It's possible.
All right, that's my only question.
It's highly possible, yeah.
That's my only question. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go. It seems like you have a lot of agencies to follow up with, you know, legal documents. I want to plug the fact that if you are a lawyer and you want the weirdest case of your life pro bono, and you might get murdered, but you might, you know, really cause a change in the system of Dallas. If you could join the cause of James Robert Wright, he will put breadcrumbs in the right direction. And, you know, do you want to say anything about your lawyer needs at the moment, your legal needs?
Oh, Jesus, we need all the fuck. Name a kind of lawyer there is, and we need it. I mean, we need a lawyer for estate and probate. We need a fucking lawyer for criminal shit because of the shit they're inventing, saying that David did. I mean, come on. No, look, David is totally innocent. His dog shoots out the front door. We shoot out after dog to try and save it from being hit by a car, and the next thing we know, we're being sworn by the 3rd Battalion, and being disappeared into the night. I didn't know what... Look, do you realize how traumatizing that was? I didn't know what to think. What are you supposed to think when you're walking down a street in your neighborhood and police come from every direction and snatch your fucking cousin away from you and you don't know anything of what just happened or what... How are you supposed to feel?
So he had brass knuckles and they sent 30 cops to arrest him?
No one, look, he had them in his pocket. We had we'd been cleaning up his house. He just unloaded a box Sherry Sang where those were in, okay? He put them in his pocket, and when the dog shut out the door, guess what? There's no time to think, oh, gee, let me stop. Come on. See, this is what happened. This is why they're going to go down, because it was an illegal search and seizure, okay? For them to do what they did, they had to have probable cause, and they don't, because a dude walking down his own sidewalk after his dog in a neighborhood he's lived in for 36 years is not probable cause. Now, if he was running down the road waving a gun and acting crazy, okay, but that's not what happened.
You know, one thing you told me that happens in Dallas is even if you get a judgment by a judge against police or against whoever is inconvenient for the oil baroness and a moo-moo on the phone, whatever, they'll just go in the back where the law was written and logged, and they'll disappear the audio recording, and they'll disappear the verdict from the book. Now, you know, how are you going to circumvent that problem?
I'm going to shine so much public media light on it that they are forced to change it. Just like we shone so much fucking light on the city of Los Angeles and their dealings with Wells Fargo, that Wells Fargo is now banned from banking in Los Angeles, the fourth largest economy in the world. Yeah, fuck with me. Fuck with me. Dallas is on notice. I will fucking lay waste to that city hall. So keep it up. Keep it up.
Somehow you inherit the ring of Princess Diana. It's almost like that's like the ring of from J.R.R. Tolkien's book, you know, The Lord of the Rings. It's like you have power. You got the proof, you know. You got the highest level of magic. That's why Mihail's calling you all the time.
Well, the reason why, back to this ring for a moment, why this is such a perhaps sore issue is because it's not a royal crown jewel, okay? I mean, it kind of is in a way because of the connotation, but no, this was a gift from the Phaiadene to Diana, okay? It symbolizes the fact that once upon a time, back in 1997, we almost had peace between Christians and Muslims. And it was going to happen because of that. And they didn't like that. And they had to stop it. You know, someone should try to interview the royal family, because if they ever could, you would find that their official opinion on the matter is, she fucked a Muslim, she had to die. So if you feel as a Brit that you need a monarch that fucking thinks that way, you know what? Britain is a place that I am not wanting to visit much anymore, because it sounds to me like people there have Stockholm Syndrome, and they're in love with being bossed around by a family of gangsters, just like this city of Dallas is in love with being bossed around by a family of gangsters. But you know what? That's something that I actually have the power to stop. So I'm going to work on that for right now, because I've got nothing left for Dallas, and I'm going to have so much fun raking them over the coals. Fuck them.
So the Illuminati, they want to have perpetual wars going on to manifest a one-world government. If you constantly have wars, then the state has to become bigger and bigger and bigger all the time with the military-industrial complex to keep killing people and keep people in poverty and keep them under the thumb of the oil and gas and gold royal families. Douchebags. So
course,
what you're saying is Diana went off script.
Doesn't have any money or power at all to speak of if they're not able to operate by their playbook, the only one they know how, which is war profiteering.
Right. So Diana went off script. She was supposed to be Dionysus, who sacrificed under the moon and whatever that story is. So she went off script, she fucked a Muslim, and then they played out this Dionysus murder ritual.
Yes, that is spot on correct.
Now, the night JFK got shot, did people earn their 33rd degree in the Dallas Rite, the Dallas Scottish Rite building?
Mm-hmm.
That was a ritual murder in which they got merit badges from the Illuminati.
Listen, Freemasons are the stupidest of them all. No one can even see the handwriting on the wall here that just this family has had two fucking members of two generations as the administrator of that facility. Come on. And they can't connect the dots here of what's going on.
Hmm. Who's the administrator of the Scottish Rite building in Dallas right now?
I care so little about that I haven't even bothered to look. I don't know. Probably some old pedophile like they prefer.
Yeah. Yikes. What do you think's going to happen
with... doesn't know that, you know...
You know, Bill Cosby...
The way that you crumble Freemasonry is you inform all the wives of Masons that they're covering up for members who are into little boys, okay? That's how you do that. And then maybe once they all start getting divorced and taken to the fucking bank, to the cleaners, okay? Maybe that shit'll change.
Hmm. Yeah, do you think Trump is on this case at all? You know, I was telling you the other day that I think that Huma Abedin...
I'm not even tempted to comment about Donald Trump because he's not interesting enough to make me sick, okay? By the way, here again, people are so damn dumb, they can't even see that he's the current head of Clan MacLeod. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, is the current head of Clan Sinclair, so... The North American continent is being run by Scottish clans, not an elected democracy. Wake the fuck up.
Yeah. And if you're not on board with their script, they'll just kill you and make it a ritual.
I guess so. Well, you know what? They've been throwing their fucking cheap mutt dogs at David and I for the last 2 weeks, and we're still standing, bitches. So... bring it, you know, because the more they do, the worse they look, and they're going to be their own downfall.
Hey, James, you little faggot, you better give me a call back in 2 minutes, otherwise I'm going to make sure you're dead. I'll clip your toenails out, okay?
I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually having to do very little on my end. They're doing my work for me. People are calling, people are calling the FBI on our behalf. It's a matter of time until that fucking house on Shirestone gets raided and all the heroin and the whores and the fucking crack and whatever else gets drug out and for all of precious Preston Hollow to see.
So, yeah, your aunt was murdered because she lived in a nice house that they could run heroin and hookers out of.
Sherry was killed because she was the last moral fiber of this family that was attempting to police that shit. Mm. And she was the executor of the estate, you see? So, we've got motive, we've got all of it, so they need to make arrests.
Yeah, your story blows my mind, James. Nice to catch up with you, you know. I got a roast battle coming up. I got stand up coming up. You know, I'm working on our script, our cloning script. So I got some things cooking on my side too, buddy. So I'll see you in September. You know, I'll bring some Cali weed and you'll give me some updates then, okay, bud?
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid that this is all going to get worse before it gets better, but. You know what? We're on the right side here, and we're good with God, and they need to ask themselves, where are they in that? You know? Because they're supporting evil, they're supporting corruption, they're supporting fucking mafia bullshit, and it's gross. It's really gross.
So do you think that you have some ascended masters on your side, some ascended spirits whispering to you, keeping you safe in the in a metaphysical plane?
Absolutely, and I think David does too. And look, when you fight for what is right, okay, and just in this world, the little fucking evil shitheads, whatever, you know, good luck with that. Whatever. It's just like me and the Masons. This is like that whole fight all over again, just a different version. Mm. I don't know what it is about me and being in Dallas that causes, like, the very fabric of society to unravel, but, yeah, that's what we're doing.
That's how I was in the New Orleans comedy scene with the white people there. Anyway, I love you very much, James Wright. I'll see you in Dallas. I gotta go, my friend. Thanks for the update.
All right, man. Yeah, thank you, too.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
There he is, James Robert Wright. That's been another episode of Highway Diary. You know, I give you a little lesson on the stuff I'm sharing with you, some comedy. Then we're going to get seriously dramatic and, you know, update you on what's going on with James Wright and his battle against the evil forces of the Illuminati. So I hope you had a good time. It was fun for me. That's been another episode. Well, I thought the podcast was over right there, but I started to get into my feelings. I started to get into my study of comics. You know, comics are very important because we don't shy away from a situation. We turn into a situation. You know, I don't want to shy away from saying the rudest things possible to Brian McDaniel. I want to see if I can break the barrier of how rude I can be to that person. May 22nd, check my roast battle out. You know, James, in his phone call, alluded to a ongoing murder investigation, right? According to James Robert Wright, he says that Sherry Rutherford, maiden name Milliam, was murdered by Deborah Catherine Milliam and Gregory Brown. And in so doing, Deborah Catherine Milliam attained power of attorney, took over the house, which is 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75244, where she is running heroin out of, where she is running a prostitution racket in association with Gregory Brown. And Betty Brown is in a coma. But the landline associated with 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas, whenever they get a phone call, the Dallas police, from that number, they take their orders from Betty Brown, who they believe to be an elderly lady, but who owns all the TV networks, owns all the newspapers in town, you know. So they go, well, we want to listen to what she says so that we're always written about well. So what do you want us to do, Betty Brown? But actually, Betty Brown is in a coma. And so who's actually in a moo-moo, on heroin, on the phone with the Dallas police, is Deborah Catherine Milliam, the adopted daughter of Betty Brown. So there you go there. So the adopted daughter of Betty Brown is making the phone call, pretending to be her adopted mom, Betty Brown, going, hi, Dallas police. I know things still run like 1946 out here, where the baroness of the media mogul station can call y'all, and you just take your thumbs right out of your hineys and go arrest whoever I want. And you know who's on to my whole murder scheme that I want arrested for no reason is David Rutherford. He's there in hiding with James Robert Wright. Go arrest him. So then all these Dallas police swarm in on him. This is the situation described by James Robert Wright. You know, whether this is true or not, I'm not down there. I don't know anything. But I can tell you that James Robert Wright, every single thing that he's told me on and off the podcast, conspiracy-wise, I later find out to be true. So I don't know how he's... This is very specific, very actionable information, you know. And I'm just being a good friend here. And I have the phone number of the FBI. So together, on the Highway Diary podcast... This is a first. We're calling the FBI to report a murder, and a theft of property.
Oh, you've reached FBI headquarters. If this is an emergency, please hang up and dial 911. Please note, this call may be recorded. If you're calling about a background check to report criminal activity, a tip, or complaint, press 1. For internet crime, to report a crime... All representatives are currently assisting other callers. Please hold for the next available representative.
It's bureaucracy for you. There's some guy in Arkansas. My neighbor's pig just fucked my wife. I want the FBI involved. I want the Kansas City Police involved. I want the pig union hung from the rafters. You know, so like people who have murder have to wait. Just some guy in the bayou right now is calling the FBI saying, you know, there's been 2 alligators across the way from my sea-doo, eyeball of me. Trying to get my head with the alligator magic, FBI. I was trying to reach the president. I don't know how high up the chain you have access to. But I just about ate 40 pounds of crawfish this morning, mud bugs. I got another boil going, and I'm figuring I'm going to make alligator stew. I'm going to make a murder out of this. I was trying to reach the president directly, but I want to say the other day, I come into my little niece's room up there in the shack.
All representatives are currently assisting other callers. Your call is very important to us. Please hold for the next available representative. Thank you for your patience.
My niece was being serenaded by an alligator with a fiddle. And he was trying to use his voodoo alligator magic to lure her into a stupor and walk.
Thank you for calling the FBI. Can I get your first and last name, please?
Hello, this is Eric Hollerbach. That's E-R-I-C-H-O-L-L-E-R-B-A-C-H.
Read that back to make sure I have it correct. First name E-R-I, C as in Charlie, last name H-O-L-L-E-R, B as in Bravo, A, C as in Charlie, H.
That's right.
And can I get a contact telephone number for you? What can I help you with today?
What is your name, my friend?
I do not give my name out for security purposes. I can provide my operator ID, which is 9209.
Okay, 9209, we will play this game. So I had told to me an ongoing murder case that happened in Dallas. That's why I'm calling the headquarters, because even though I'm in Los Angeles, this concerns the Dallas police. And so I needed to call the headquarters so we kind of can get some jurisdictional leeway over. So, it was told to me that Sherry Rutherford, that's R-U-T-H-F-O-R-D, her maiden name is Milam, M-I-L-A-M, and she was residing in 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75244. She also inherited basically all of that family's wealth was the lead matriarch of the family. Therefore, she was murdered by Deborah Catherine Milam, that's M-I-L-A-M, and Gregory Brown, that's G-R-E-G-O-R-Y, Brown, more specifically poisoned. The only thing that we have is a death certificate, but we don't have a coroner's report. We don't have a body. The body went missing. We don't have a coroner's report. They lost it. Now, the Dallas police takes their cues from a lady called Betty Brown, who resides in 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas. But she's kind of in a coma and on her last days. So the Dallas police think they're taking messages from Betty Brown, but really it's Deborah Catherine Millam, who murdered Sherry Rutherford, took over power of attorney, took over the state, the estate.
And how do you know that this was who murdered Sherry?
Is this the tips line?
Yes, sir.
This is just a hot tip for you. But there's no body.
I have to validate information. That's how this process works.
Yes.
So for starters, murder is not a federal offense. It's a state offense. It's typically handled within the state of occurrence. So the FBI can't just involve itself automatically in that. So I would need to validate some information as to why the FBI could get involved here.
Well, I believe it's just a matter of the Dallas cops are somehow involved. Now, the other thing I haven't told you yet is that Deborah Catherine Millam is using 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75244 to run heroin and a prostitution ring.
And how do you know that that is going on?
That's the hot tip for you.
Sir, I would need direct information as to how you know this is going on. Speculation is not something that the FBI can work off of.
Right. Well, David Rutherford, that's D-A-V-I-D, R-U-T-H-F-O-R-D, whose mother was killed, Sherry Rutherford, poisoned, I think he would be a good person to talk to.
Well, if David would have the specific information, sir, then he would need to be the person that called it.
Okay. Well, they have been calling in. They're running into a lot of red tape with the Dallas police. The Dallas police recently was outside David's house and arrested him for no reason. He chased out of it. His dog was barking, ran out of into the street, and then there was like 24 Dallas police who arrested him. So that's why it's kind of a sensitive matter where, why are 24 police sitting outside? Well, because Deborah Catherine Millam calls the Dallas police and has them be watched, right? So they're always outside his house. And then they put him in because he had brass knuckles in his pocket because he was going through his mom, Sherry's, belongings. And they arrest him for having a weapon he's not supposed to have. But why? There's no probable cause in his arrest in Dallas, Texas. So he is calling, but, you know, when you say things like, well, that would be a local case, well, they are doing everything they can, but the problem is the Dallas police are on the side of...
What I'm saying, sir, is yes. If you're unwilling to provide the specific information that we would need, then David would have to call in to the FBI.
Okay. What exactly piece of information? How do I know of the heroin? How do I know about the prostitutes?
Yes, sir. How do you know that these events are occurring? How do you know that Deborah was responsible for Sherry's death? How do you know that heroin and prostitution is being run out of that location?
Well, I was hoping this was the hot tip line, you know, so that's a hot tip for you. But David and a person called James Robert Wright is telling me this information.
And what is their direct call? How do they know that this is going on?
David's direct knowledge of this is that his mom was murdered. And right after that happened, the power of estate was obfuscated by Deborah Catherine Millam and Gregory Brown. So at that point, his mom's house was taken. And he has seen what those two people have turned the house into. So like I say, when you're asked for direct knowledge of it, David Rutherford is the person to talk to. But it's tricky because he tries to tell the police, but they arrest him for nonsense. So that's kind of why I'm...
Well, that would not preclude him from contacting the FBI to report it.
He probably has. And another person who's been contacting the FBI is a person called James Robert Wright. And a lot of people on his behalf have been contacting the FBI as well. So I just wanted to add a file just so everyone gets all the names right. Yeah.
And when did Sherry pass away?
I want to say 2 months ago.
Well, let me place you on a brief hold, okay?
Yes. So we are talking to 9209 of the FBI. Pretty exciting stuff.
Okay, Eric, are you still there?
Yes, 9209. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Do you have any contact information, location, date of birth, anything like that for David?
I have a way to get that. Hang on one second. You know, I have the phone number of James Robert Wright, who is residing with David. They're cousins. The phone number of James is, so if you contact that person, you can get to David.
Okay, and do you know where they live?
Dallas.
You don't have an address or
no, sir.
Like
no.
And when did David and James begin telling you that this was going on?
This has been ongoing. I've known James for about 2 years, and when the murder happened a few months ago, I was first notified, and James has been telling me this information. But he's also, you know, posting pictures of him and David, and, you know, I'm very aware of their situation.
Okay, and according to David, he has seen heroin at the home?
Yes.
And he has seen prostitutes at the home as well?
Yes, David and James used to live at Shirestone as well.
And that address was 1217 Shirestone Lane?
No, incorrect. It is 12107 Shirestone Lane, Dallas, Texas, 75244. Now, they're supposed to inherit the... I mean, if Deborah and Greg went down for the murder of Sherry, they would inherit this residence. But because Deborah took over as power of attorney... You know, she snatched it right up, and there's a little collusion with the Dallas judge system, and there you go. So
and
they lost.
Deborah is Sherry's sister?
No. Sherry is sisters with Betty Brown, maiden name Millam. Her adopted kid is Deborah Catherine, and her brother is Gregory Brown. They took over Shirestone because Sherry, you know, she had inherited it, so they took her out so that they could inherit it, and they kicked out David and James Robert Wright.
Okay, so Deborah would be considered Sherry's niece, is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. And Gregory Brown is her husband?
No, brother.
Brother.
So, but Deborah, I believe Deborah's adopted into that family. It doesn't mean anything, but Gregory is, I think, the biological son of Betty Brown.
And Deborah's first name, is that D-E-B-O-R-A-H?
Yes, Catherine, K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, Millam, M-I-L-A-M.
And Gregory, is that G-R-E-G-O-R-Y?
That's right. And Betty Brown is also at that address, but in a very reduced state. She's not capable of operating a phone or talking really, and she's hardcore kind of dementia symptoms. But there's a direct line that the Dallas police think is Betty Brown, but it's not. It's Deborah. And so Deborah's power over the Dallas police, because you have to understand that Betty Brown is a media mogul there. They owned all the CBS affiliates and the newspapers in town at one point. So there's kind of a relation with the Dallas police and that family, because that family never writes anything bad about the Dallas police. So when that landline calls, they jump.
So this is why it's a real tricky situation and why they haven't got any local action against this poisoning, because of it's complicated and, you know, they're taking their cues from a matriarch of a media conglomerate.
I do have to document some information on my caller, Eric. Let me give your date of birth.
10/31/85.
And your home address. Well, I will get this information documented. If there's anything we can do, I want to speak with a colleague of mine and see if a report can be sent out to the field for their review. At this point, it would be most helpful if David could call in and provide the specific information that he has, call in to the FBI. Other than that, if the local police there in Dallas aren't assisting, you could attempt contacting the state police of Texas.
Okay, so just to be clear, if I can have David call you within the day, that if he asks for 9209, that...
If I'm available, he can request my operator ID. If not, anyone here will be able to pull the transaction of today's call and add to it if you provide your name and telephone number.
Okay, I'll try to do that.
Me today.
Yeah, I'll try to call in and request you as soon as possible just so you can stay on top of it. You know what I'm saying? But because I kind of, you know, told you everything, so hopefully he can clear up any confusion I left out.
Well, I will get this information documented. We thank you for calling in today.
Thanks. All right, 9209. Take care, my friend.
Hello.
Hi, James.
Hey.
It's Eric. How you doing, bud?
I'm okay. How are you?
So, I was just on the phone with the FBI.
Yeah.
And so, their headquarters in Washington, D.C. is 202-324-3000, and I got in touch with an operator, and he wouldn't give me his name, but he said that his operator nine is his operator name is 9209. So I just called him. I told him all the names you gave me. I told him all the claims you've made, which I carefully wrote down, you know, when we had that conversation on Facebook the other day. And
yeah,
I told them everything. So if you want to call the FBI and second my information, their number is 202-324-3000 and ask for...
Wait, I'm looking for a... I can't find anything.
Man,
I'm seriously, I'm about to lose it.
Don't lose it, James.
All right, 202.
202.
Mm-hmm.
324.
Mm-hmm.
3000. And the person who just wrote up this report with all the names that we carefully went over is operator number 9209, but I can't get you his name. So if you call that guy and second, and I've also recorded that phone call, you know, because I'm a bad bitch and I want to make sure that everything is, you know, followed through on. Now, do you want to give me an update on anything that's happening with you and David?
Is it being recorded? Do I need to speak clearly?
Yes, it is being recorded. If you can speak clearly, that'd be nice.
All right. Well, I need to go in there and do something with my teeth, but I'm just waiting. It doesn't matter. Well, we are waiting. I don't know what to say because everything people are calling me, and the reason I'm so fucking frustrated right now is because they're saying things like, "Is this really true? Do you, are you worried that you sound crazy?" Things like that. And look, if anyone would stop and run a fucking background on that goddamn whore, they would see that these things I'm saying, like murderer, whore, drug trafficker, they're all things that she did guilty of in a court of law at some point. So this is, these are not words I'm pulling out of thin air or making up or exaggerating.
So anyone can Google Deborah Catherine Millam, and it would be pretty clear what this person has a record of and all that.
Of course. Yeah. Go to Puppet Data, go to any of them, and you will see. And it, I guarantee you, it'll be the thickest, longest bunch of information in a background check you've ever seen in your life. Okay? Right. So, we got the printout here of one we did. I mean, it's like a thick book. You know?
Yeah.
The more we go, okay, like, for example, one thing we found out is, because everybody keeps telling us, the Jaguar is not, Sherry never got that car, that's not hers, that blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no, we know now that it absolutely was her car. She bought it. It wasn't a gimme, it was bought, the title is in her name, and all these things, the title to it, the car itself, the title to this house. We all got a phone call from Deborah's neurotic son, who really needs to do some soul searching and all this and stop covering up for his junkie mother that killed his father.
Wait, so you're saying Gregory Brown is Deborah's son, not her brother?
No, that's her brother.
Yeah, okay.
She has a son that's like 25.
And what's his
who
name?
Who I threw away my entire 20s to raise, and I made him into a valedictorian. And the last time I saw him, he was in a apartment on the UTA campus working on a computer science degree. Then I left Dallas. Now I'm back, and I find that he quit school and has been running his mother around, picking up her dope ever since, doing nothing with his life. And I could not be more devastated over that, because I did. I threw away, while everybody else, all my friends were out doing what people in their 20s do, clubbing, fucking, everything else, I was sitting home playing parents, doing the book reports and the science fair projects and meet the teacher crap and all of it. And apparently it was a colossal waste of my time.
Mm.
So, and he called on her behalf because she knows that I'm going to record her and she can't be sober. So she doesn't want me recording her with her speech slurring. So she sends her son. This is real healthy and not nice family moments, right? And he admitted that, yeah, they've got all that stuff. So that means that everything we've been alleging, that she's trying to steal this house, she stole the car, all of it, is true. And yet, where are the sirens? That is my question. Every 5 minutes, I ask myself the question, where are the fucking sirens and the doors being broken down in that fucking evil house? What is the deal, man?
Well, James,
like we're like theorizing some hypothetical here. This is all fucking fact. It's done. The crimes have been committed. She is sloppy. She thought she would have David picked up on bullshit, made up shit, and him thrown in jail, that I would never come back to town. Well, huh, think again. And yet, here I am, and here we are doing all of this onslaught, and where are the fucking law enforcement? Where? The shit I've said, that's all true. Are they bored? Are they lazy? Are they paid off by that bitch? Where the fuck are they?
Well,
why the fuck have the doors of that house not been broken the fuck down and that bitch dragged out and her head cracked open with a fucking police baton so all the heroin can leak out? You see what I'm saying?
I think I got a pretty good grasp of what you're saying. I mean, the audience just listened to me give a phone call with the FBI naming all the names. I mean, very clear information right on key with what you're telling me. Now, Betty Brown and Sherry Rutherford, they're sisters, right?
No, Sherry was her oldest daughter. Yeah.
Sherry is Betty's oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm. Which is why David is such a threat to this situation, because you're talking about the oldest kid who was the executor and her only child. So he has a lot of room to speak in that matter of that estate and so on, far more than me, because I'm just the nephew
right
to Betty.
Yeah, so James,
I have say,
yeah,
but not like that.
James, what the advice I was given by Officer 9209 is if David would call 202-324-3000, the FBI Washington headquarters, if he is to say mm-hmm. that his mom was murdered by Betty Brown, then I think that would hold more water, because they're like, well, how do you know this? How do you know this? That's what he kept on saying to me. Like, I don't even know if I'm going to write this down if you don't really know this. But if David calls and said his mother was murdered and everything he says is seconded by the report I just gave to 9209, I think you might have a way to let the authorities at least be fully aware. And if this ploy with
that's fine with me. He just ran down to the grocery store because we were out of everything. But yeah, he'll be back shortly, and I'll get him to do that.
Yeah, get him to call 202-324-3000 and ask for 9209 and say he's David. And watch what happens, because I just gave every single name you gave me. And he can, you know, so that officer in particular is going to have a working knowledge of this. And that might be a way through. I can't really get you a $3,000 lawyer, my buddy, but, you know, maybe this could, you know, because I was thinking, the reason why I didn't call the Los Angeles FBI and the reason I didn't call the Dallas FBI is, what the fuck is that going to do? You know, you got to go to the top of the top, so you have to call Washington if it's a matter of local police, you know, taking their cues from some bitch in a moo-moo, you know? I mean, the levels of incompetence you can't even speak to, so you have to go to the feds.
Yeah. You know, the local police are useless. They're totally useless. They are sold out. They obviously, Deborah is either sucking one of them or paying one of them, and they're helping her.
Right.
We know this for a fact. We don't know who. Don't have a badge number or a face, but we know what's going on. It's gone on before. And no. See, another thing is, like, because that whore is in there, he's got access to family, money, attorneys, blah blah blah. So, and that's why I can't stand attorneys, is because they're whores too, and they will sit there and accept money from people that they know are committing crimes because they want that money. And they don't care. There's not morals involved in your thinking process. So, you know, we need lawyers, but we can't access them. Why can't we? Well, there's money over here, but we can't touch it because Deborah illegally committed fraud and froze the shit, posing as the next of kin, which she is not. And she knew what she was doing. She knew exactly what she was doing. And now sends her own son playing little criminal junior in training. Oh, I can come over and bring you the title and the banking information and blah, blah. Really? Because a week ago, you fuckers were claiming this didn't exist. I put the heat on your asses on social media, and suddenly you're conceding and I mean, oh, yeah, oh, we were right. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're going to find that we were right about every single thing we'd said. Otherwise, I wouldn't open my mouth to say it.
All right, James. Well, you got some phone calls to make, and if you can have David make the phone call, my advice from the FBI was, you know, they take a son saying his mother is killed way more, you know, that's more credible to them than some weirdo in Canoga Park. So.
Well, they need to either take it credible or, you know, before this is all said and done, they may be sued too, because I'm sick and tired of watching law enforcement enable this crime family. It's gone on all 35 years I've been on this earth and watching it, and it's disgusting, and they can all fucking burn in hell. I don't care, man. I just want to see what's right happen, and for that to happen, they all have to go down in flames. So,
yeah. All right, buddy. Well, I'm going to post this podcast soon. It has the FBI is featured in it, you know, so fun times.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll, when their operators are on my podcast along with your story, maybe it would motivate them to do anything about this.
Maybe. I mean, we hope so, but, you know, I already hope that just by come out with this shit, that it would have done something, but no, it hasn't.
Well, look, when
I'm
David...
I'm being asked if I'm crazy. What the fuck? No, I'm not fucking crazy. God damn it, but do your fucking job.
I love your energy, you know, and hopefully one day we'll be sitting on rocking chairs, you know, laughing about this, but, you know, in the short term, I think if David calls that number, you know, you guys would have a better idea of, you know, if you can get help on this issue or not.
Well, I know one thing. If no one in the Dallas police or the FBI is qualified or willing to deal with this, then they all need to be fired. All of them. They're not doing their job. They are corrupt and being paid by fucking criminal whores. So, whatever. That'll happen too. We'll see. We'll get to that point when we fucking get to it, won't we?
Well, I love your energy. You know, thanks for sharing with me. You know, it certainly makes my podcast more interesting. I've never had a murder case, you know. But let's see.
Yeah, well, the energy and all that, dude, I mean, you try growing up in this sick shit. See how you feel.
Yeah.
I would not be bothering with this if not for the way that they now tried to attack David. That was the one wild card that got me back. So.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd still be in Cali, like, giving a flying fuck about these people.
Well, hopefully all those ghosts you summoned, you know, are with you. You have little ascended masters whispering encouragement in your ear, and hopefully you have help on the astral plane as well as the FBI level.
Well, I know we have help in the regard that we are on the right side. We are standing up for what is right, but, you know, the problem with that is evil people have a lot looser boundaries.
Hmm.
So.
All right, bud.
There we go. But thank you.
All right, James. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.